It appalls me to see prominent, well-educated, and highly intelligent men making such a fuss because God has not given them devotional experience. I don't mean that if God does choose to grant them this consolation, they should not accept it and cherish it. Because if this happens, it is God's will. But if they are not moved by devotion, they should not wear themselves out trying to conjure it up. They should understand that if His Majesty is not giving it to them, they don't need it. They should take control of themselves and move on. They need to see their desire for consolations and prayer as a fault. Not only have I witnessed this, but I have proved it true. Such cravings are the artifact of imperfection. They reflect the lack of both freedom of spirit and the courage to overcome adversity. I am emphasizing this because it is very important to cultivate such freedom and determination. This is less of an issue for beginners than it is for those who have made some progress. Many people start on the spiritual path, but never reach the end. I think this is because they refuse to embrace the cross at the onset. Believing they are accomplishing nothing, they become despondent. They cannot bear it when the intellect ceases to function. They do not realize that when the mind is stilled, the will is growing strong and robust. We need to realize that the Lord does not care about the things we worry about. They may seem like faults to us, but they are not. His Majesty already knows our misery and our inadequacy better than we could ever know ourselves. He also knows that all we really want is to think of Him and love Him always. It is our determination that He desires. The suffering we create for ourselves has no other purpose than to disquiet our souls. Then, if we fail to profit from an hour of prayer, we waste 4 more hours fretting over it. Sometimes the problem actually stems from a physical condition. I have a great deal of personal experience in this matter, and having carefully analyzed it and discussed it with spiritual people, have confirmed that what I say is true. We feel so miserable that our poor little imprisoned souls end up sharing in the misery of the body. Changes in the weather and our natural body cycles prevent us from doing what we really want to do and causes all kinds of suffering. This is not our fault. The more we try to force ourselves at times like these, the worse our condition becomes and the longer it lasts. We need to use discernment and take care not to smother the poor soul. We need to acknowledge when we are sick. Then our spiritual practice may have to be adjusted. Sometimes these changes will be necessary for several days. Let us suffer our exile as best we can. It is a sad thing when a soul in love with God realizes that she is a host to such a wretched guest as the body, which prevents her from doing what she really wants. The reason I mention the need for discernment is that sometimes it is the spirit of evil that is causing the problem. Just as it is not always a good idea to torture the soul into doing what she is incapable of doing, it is not always appropriate to give up on prayer the minute we encounter severe turmoil and distraction. We do have alternatives. We can engage in certain external activities, such as works of charity or spiritual reading. Sometimes, of course, we are not even well enough for these. In that case, let us serve our body out of love for God, remembering all the times the body has served the soul. A genuinely holy conversation can function as an authentic spiritual practice. Our guides might also recommend that we spend some time in nature. Experience is a great teacher because it helps us to see what is best for us and to realize that God can be served by everything we do. His yoke is easy. It is of the utmost importance that we do not drag our souls, as they say, but lead them gently. In this way, we will make much better progress. I don't care how many times I repeat myself. I must return to this essential advice. Do not let feelings of emptiness or distracting thoughts distress you or disquiet your soul. Do you desire liberation? Do you wish you weren't always so troubled? Then do not be afraid of the cross. You will see how the Lord helps you to carry it. Then you will make joyful progress and find blessings everywhere you look. It is clear that if the well is dry, we cannot put water in it. Still, it is equally true that we should never stop dipping our buckets, because when there is water there, God uses it to multiply our virtues. Chapter 12, Lifting the Bucket. I know that I digressed quite a bit in the previous chapter, but that's because I felt that what I had to say was very necessary. What I have been trying to explain is that we can accomplish a great deal through our own efforts and help ourselves to experience deep devotion during this initial phase of the spiritual path. When we think and reflect on what Christ suffered for us, we are moved by compassion. The sorrow that arises may bring tears, and there is an inexplicable sweetness in this. Thinking about the glory we are hoping for, the love Christ demonstrated for us, and the miracle of His resurrection, we are filled with a joy that is neither wholly spiritual nor entirely sensory. But it is a virtuous joy, and the corresponding sorrow is equally worthy. There is virtue and worth in everything that awakens devotion, even if it comes in part through the labor of the intellect. Of course, this devotional blessing cannot be earned or obtained unless the beloved chooses to bestow it. If God has not yet raised a soul higher than this, it is best for her not to strive to elevate herself. All she will do is thwart her own progress and suffer harm. Please take special note of this danger. There are many things the soul can do in this state to awaken love. She can make resolutions to serve God and engage in other acts that stimulate the growth of virtue. There is a book called The Art of Serving God, which does a fine job of explaining these things. It is appropriate reading for those who are at this stage in which the intellect is still an active participant in spiritual practice. The soul can picture herself in the presence of Christ in all His sacred humanity and build up the fire of love. She can keep Him close to her always, talking to Him, asking Him for the things she needs, and confiding her troubles. When she feels joy, she can rejoice with Him, but she must never let the good times make her forget Him. She should try to communicate with Him, not through prescribed prayers, but with the words of her own heart that express her desires and needs. This is an excellent way to make rapid progress. Any soul who strives to remain in Christ's precious company, who is sincerely grateful for this intimacy, and who truly finds herself in love with this Lord, who has done so much for us, is a soul I consider to be evolved. This is why we should not be distressed when we are not moved by devotion. We should simply thank God, who allows us to want only to please Him, even if our efforts seem less than successful. This practice of carrying Christ in our consciousness is beneficial at all phases of the spiritual path, especially in these first degrees of prayer, and it quickly advances us to the second. It also safeguards us against the perils with which the spirit of evil may confront us in the later stages. So, this is what we can do for ourselves. Anyone who tries to do more than this, struggling to elevate the spirit to obtain a taste of a divine sweetness that is not freely given, risks losing everything he has gained so far and jeopardizing future growth. These blessings belong to the realm of the supernatural. If he puts the intellect to sleep prematurely, he finds his soul desolate in a dry desert. Since the entire edifice is built on humility, the nearer we draw to God, the more we must cultivate this virtue. If we don't, everything will be ruined. Our Lord is already doing too much for us by drawing us into His presence, considering how imperfect we are. I see that it is arrogant for us to desire to ascend higher. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't raise our consciousness by reflecting on sublime things, such as the wonders of heaven and the great wisdom of God. Personally, I never had the ability to reflect in this way, as I have mentioned, and besides, I was too wretched to try. God gave me the grace early on to recognize how much courage it requires for me to even reason my way through worldly things, let alone ponder divine things. But other people can benefit from this practice especially if they are educated. Education, in my opinion, is like a treasure that can only enhance this practice, as long as the learning is grounded in humility. I witnessed this phenomenon only a few days ago among some educated men who have only recently begun to practice prayer and have already made remarkable progress. This only reinforces my conviction that educated men should become spiritual men. I will say more about this later. When I say that we should not raise ourselves up to God until He raises us Himself, I am speaking the language of the Spirit. Anyone who has experience will understand me. If I'm not making myself understood, I don't know what more I can say about it. In mystical experience, the intellect ceases to function because God suspends it. If God gives me the grace and the help to explain it better, I will elaborate on this later. For now, please understand that we should not take it upon ourselves to shut down the mind. If we stop using the intellect, we will be left frozen and stupid, accomplishing nothing. When the Lord suspends the intellect and stems the flow of thoughts, He Himself gives it something to astonish and occupy it. Without any thought, the mind understands more in the length of time it takes to recite the creed than we could possibly learn in an entire lifetime through our own human efforts. To presume that we can keep the faculties of the soul busy and the mind quiet at the same time is ridiculous. Even if I am misunderstood, I will say it again. This effort to suspend the intellect is not very humble. It may not constitute a terrible mistake, but it is certainly a waste of time and energy, and it's an exercise in frustration. The soul is left like a person who is about to leap forward and is suddenly pulled back by someone else. She feels like she has depleted all her strength and has not achieved what she set out to achieve with it. Anyone who wishes to take a look at this will detect that small lack of humility I mentioned reflected in the small spiritual progress made here. Humility has this excellent quality. When it is present in any act, the act never leaves the soul with that sense of frustration. I think I have explained this clearly, but maybe I have only clarified it for myself. May the Lord open the eyes of the ones who are reading this. May He give them the experience they need to understand it, even if just a little. For many years, I read a lot of things and didn't understand anything I read. Even though God was blessing me, for a long time, I couldn't come up with the words to describe His blessings. This was no small trial. Then, in a single moment, His Majesty amazed me by teaching me everything all at once. There is one thing I can say for sure. I spoke with many spiritual people about my experiences, and they tried their best to explain what the Lord was giving to me so that I would be able to talk about it. But I was too dense to understand them. Or maybe, since His Majesty has always been my greatest teacher, it was the Lord's wish that I had only Him to thank for my understanding. May He be blessed for everything. It upsets me to confess the truth about all that He has given to me. I neither requested nor desired these things. In fact, I have never even been curious about their significance, although it would have been a virtue to try and understand them. As it was, I was far more interested in trivial matters. And yet God gave me a moment of such dazzling clarity that I suddenly understood everything that had happened to me and was able to explain it all in a way that astonished me even more than it did my spiritual directors, since I was far more aware of my own stupidity than they were. Since this happened only a short time ago, I will not try to understand beyond what He has already taught me, unless it is a matter of conscience. I repeat my warning one more time. It is very important for the Spirit not to ascend unless the Lord raises it up. If He does, we will know it instantly. This effort is especially damaging for women because the spirit of evil can more readily delude us. Still, I am certain that the Lord would not allow any harm to come to someone who was humbly striving to reach Him. Instead, she is more likely to profit from the very experience the spirit of evil used to throw her off course. Many people travel the path of beginners, and the advice I have offered is exceedingly important. This is why I have elaborated to such an extreme. I admit that other writers have explained all this much better. In fact, it has embarrassed me to attempt this at all, although not as much as it probably should have. May the Lord be blessed for everything who wills and consents for such a creature as I to speak about his lofty and sublime graces.